You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenue's Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Sipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Levin, and Thomas Henderson. How you guys doing?
I'm chilling. How are you doing?
I want baseball news.
I know.
Well, we have some baseball news.
I don't know if you guys follow Dan Szymborski on Twitter. And look, Dan isn't a perfect tweet. He says some stupid stuff sometimes, but he has some funny tweets, and he had a real good tweet today where it's like, yeah, my tweets are 30% stupider than normal because my brain cannot handle having no baseball news.
Like, that suck.
I'm like, yeah, that I'm about there right now.
I've got very into stocks.
And stonks?
Stonks, yes, and it's not as fun.
No, it's not.
Losing money, not as fun as baseball.
Hodl, stonks.
Glorified gambling, not as fun as real gambling.
I gotta say, real gambling is also on sports is legal in New York, so that's a very bad time to have that while there's no baseball.
My Twitter feed is nothing but sports ads. It's so annoying.
I'm getting them underneath tweets too, which is real fun.
I feel like I'm taking the crazy pills, but I'm like, I don't like gambling. I don't understand why everyone's so eager to just start gambling on sports. But maybe I'm just a loser.
Honestly,
here.
I don't really either. You know, like I'll make like a bet occasionally, but I've never been like a lose big person. You know.
Yeah, like I made a prop bet on this. Like I'll throw a little money down on like the Sixers to win the championship.
Of course, do stuff like
that. I don't need to like be making daily bets about even the NFL shit. Like, oh, is he gonna rush for 51 yards or 50 yards? I don't fucking know. I'm gonna put $100 on this.
So quite literally, I bet $5 on like five over unders, and it was like I bet five went 100, and I missed it because Dante Foreman rushed for 68 yards instead of 73. And I was like, all right. Like, I got all the other ones right. And that one, because he literally, like, because Dontrell Hilliard ended the drive for some reason. And they iced the game after that. And I was like, why was he in? That's not the running back who should be. Like, he would just was in because that's what it was. And I was like, well, that's fun.
You'll like, periodically see these, like, just dudes in shambles on Twitter because someone scores a late touchdown or someone hits a buzzer beating 3-pointer or some shit. And like, oh, the spread, my money, it's gone.
Oh, well. All right, so promote, extend, trade this week. And
trade sports betting.
A good idea. I would say, you know what, that's fine, but I actually looked stuff up for this, so it is not fine. Not letting my time go to waste here. This is episode 151, and that immediately made me think of Bacardi 151, which was discontinued in the U.S. because its alcohol content is so high that it occasionally lights on fire, and fire and alcohol.
Is it somehow 151% alcohol?
No, unfortunately, it's
151 proof, right?
Yeah, so it's only 75%.
75.5% alcohol.
Only 75%.
I've never understood why it's illegal when, like, you can still go to the store and buy Everclear, which is 180 proof.
Everclear is poison.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Bad undergrad story. Literal I did not know what Everclear was and did an Everclear shot, and I wanted to die.
Oh, man. Some family friends made some homemade limoncello using Everclear. It's very good, but it's very strong.
Yeah.
Well, Lucas, if you ever swallowed gum or something, the Everclear probably took care of that. So.
Also probably dissolved some stomach lining, you know.
It's in the COVID-19 vaccine. It's just Everclear. I got the Everclear vaccine. It was just one shot, and I will never get sick again, and I'm also immortal.
Nice. And you also can't legally drive in the state of New York.
No, I've been drunk the entire time. I've been drunk since January of 2020. It's fine.
All right. Well, anyway. What other discontinued drinks are we going to promote, extend, or trade here?
If Four Loko isn't in this list, I'm going to be very disappointed.
Well, that's not discontinued, Steve. My friend.
No, I know. There's a lot of things that got discontinued and then were brought back
by
popular demand.
Mm-hmm.
But first up, we have Kool-Aid Squeeze-Its.
Oh, wow. Then, what the fuck is a Kool-Aid Squeeze-It?
You know, how did I know that you would know what this is?
I'm Googling it.
Google.
Carry on.
You've probably seen commercials for them when you were a kid.
Yeah. Next, we have Snapple Elements. And last but not least are the Hi-C Ecto Coolers.
Man, I loved Hi-C.
Ecto Cooler. Okay, so I'll admit that I am familiar with the Kool-Aid Squeeze-Its. I just didn't know that's what they were. I've never seen nor heard of a fucking Ecto-Cooler.
What?
Is this like some Ghostbusters? Yeah, that's obviously Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
God, this looks like toxic waste from The Simpsons. It's like bright, toxic lime green. Or it looks like the fake Slurm in that Futurama episode.
And the craziest part is that green color is like orange flavor. So,
oh, and it's orange flavor. That's gross. Orange soda sucks.
What?
No. It's not soda. It's like
it's like Sunny D kind of. It's like weak Sunny D.
Oh, like Sunny D was spicy. I don't know what was in Sunny D, but that when that hit your throat the right way,
was that the one that's respect the pouch?
No, that was release the power of the sun, and then. And only can.
Oh right, yeah, I remember those commercials. Yeah,
and it contained 5% juice, and it always made me laugh at the end because they had to add that in.
It's like the Breyers, whatever, frozen dessert because it legally doesn't have enough dairy to be ice cream.
I didn't know that.
Yoo-hoo
for
is
real?
Milk drink. It's not milk.
One. I didn't know the Breyers one though.
Yoo-hoo uses milk whey instead of actual milk.
And I still can't drink it. Goddamn lactose intolerance.
Can drink Squeeze-Its, Snapple Elements, and Ecto Coolers.
I'm trading this fucking Ecto Cooler shit. This looks like it's gonna give me, it's gonna make me a mutant. I'll extend the Squeeze-Its and promote the other one. So I'm definitely getting rid of this Hi-C garbage. Jesus Christ.
It is literally the color of like the Gowanus. Like,
oh yeah, it's they just dipped a cup in the Gowanus canal and gave it to you and they said,
like, literally imagine any cartoon you've ever watched where there was some episode or scene related to toxic waste and you have the correct color for this drink.
And they came in like Gatorade shaped bottles, right? Like the bigger ones.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
But they taste good. not going to lie. I've had myself many a nectar cooler over the years, and...
It looks to me like somebody threw Nickelodeon slime in a blender for
it.
It is slime colored.
Ken nailed it.
That's the point, because it has Slimer on it, so it's supposed to be green.
It's deep. It's deep, man.
Do they still do those Nickelodeon Choice Awards?
I think so.
I believe, yeah.
I don't know if people get slimed on them still, but they definitely still do them.
Weren't there NFL games on Nickelodeon?
Yeah, they had like the slime cam stuff, and like kids were announcing it. It was wild.
Well, like 10 minutes in, I guess we should probably start talking about some baseball stuff, huh?
I mean, is there baseball stuff?
Yeah, we have some little minor news this week. I guess it's a correction from previous story or retraction, clarification, whatever. But Elian Soto will not be a Met, you guys.
Damn, there goes the long-term tampering plan.
So do we know what happened?
I don't know.
He just, like, it was just – because I remember – like, the Mets stuff got announced, and then he, like, put it on his Instagram.
Yeah.
And then it was just kind of, like, gone. Like, okay.
You know what I hope happened? I hope, like, he was talking to his brother Juan, and Juan was like, really, the Mets? Like, you know what goes on over there, right?
Yeah.
Are you sure about that? And he was like, well, no.
Better yet, I hope Juan went to call the Nats. Is Mike Rizzo still the GM there? And was like, buddy, hey buddy, I'm putting up with this dog shit team around me. Give my little bro some cash. Fuck. And then hung up the phone. And hopefully Mike Rizzo went and did that. But
yeah, well, I mean, it just just goes to show that we talk about how, like, you know, it's the way that the international market is right now. It's very quote unquote lawless and, you know, kind of problematic for the young players. And now here's the case. Well, we don't know the details, obviously, what happened. But, you know, he just basically got dropped from one team and picked up by another team, you know, conceptually anyway. If that happened to someone else that, you know, maybe isn't as much of a name brand or something like that, like, okay, you've been preparing, you think you have a deal with this team, and all of a sudden they're just like, actually, on second thought, nah. And you're kind of fucked.
Like, the likelihood that this happens under the, like, behind the scenes, because we don't know, like, he's only this, we're only talking about this because who his brother is.
Exactly.
Like, it probably happens to almost everyone who's not, like, super good. Even the super good ones, but then they probably have their pick, basically. But, like, people probably get – there's kids out there who probably get so screwed by teams who get promised for years and years and years, and then you're say like, nope, we like someone better now. Goodbye.
Not just promised, but hidden.
Yeah.
Promised and then hidden by the team, and then 2 days before signing, they'll be like, actually, we're going to spend this money elsewhere.
It's not official until you sign on that dotted line, no matter what the Mets or the Nationals, even the Nationals, like, this is not official. Like, he could change his mind again, or they could screw him over, or some team could come in and give him, like, you never know, you know? Like, there's a million things that could happen between now and 2023.
This whole system is beyond fucked.
They need to not have it anymore. But I don't know, like, they are regulated, or I don't know. Like, you can't sign 15-year-old kids like this and 16-year-old kids and stuff.
Just do an international draft with, like, actually big bonus pools, please. Like,
and if you're going to draft kids this young, they have to go to school and, like, get educated. Like, you have to – I know you're drafting them to play baseball, and, yeah, but, like, they're also kids. Like, we wouldn't draft a 16-year-old high school kid, an American one from Iowa. We'd be like, what the hell is wrong with you? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and, no, that's like, definitely, I don't know, be prerequisite.
I don't know how it's not the same, you know? Like, soccer teams have academies where the kids are, like, 9, and they have, like, 9-year-old academies and stuff, but they go to school, and they do everything else, and they, like, take care of the kids in a way better way than American teams do, you know? And
this would be such a good opportunity for a bunch of really rich people in a very privileged country to help kids help entire communities in poorer places and just like we again, we don't need to go on a long rant about
math. We've done this a million times,
right, but the cost to, you know, provide a high school education for the 50 or so kids hanging out in your DSL academy, pennies for major league teams.
Mm-hmm.
Like literal pennies.
What do you think, they can get like a quarter Alejandro Diaza for it's my preferred unit of measure.
One Alejandro, how much was he? Was like 5.75 million, if I recall correctly.
I think they can get at least 0.2 Diazas.
0.2 Diaz. Is that a metric Diaz or an imperial Diaz?
This is America, okay?
Imperial Diaz.
So, yeah, that is the only Mets-related news out there, baseball-wise. Because, you know, it's a slow time for baseball news to begin with. And we're in a lockout, and we're in a pandemic. So, crazy shit.
You're telling me you're not interested in speculating for, like, the 16th time in 3 weeks about whether the Mets and Chris Bryant are having wink-wink, nudge-nudge conversations right now?
Listen, that's out of our wheelhouse.
Uh-huh.
But what is in our wheelhouse is minor league prospect lists. So that's what we are going to do this week, is we're going to continue on with our 2022 minor league prospect list. We went over prospects 25 through 17 last week. So this week we're going to tackle a couple more guys, and we're going to start with number 16, a right-handed pitcher, Dominic Hamill. Hamill doesn't really have an extensive college resume, but a lot of people feel like he might have been one of the biggest steals of the 2021 draft. He graduated from high school and then spent 2 years at a community college, had good numbers there, and then he transferred to Dallas Baptist University in his junior year, 2020. Obviously, 2020 didn't happen, and he wasn't drafted, and he went back to Dallas Baptist as a senior pitcher. And he was their Friday night ace. He posted a 4.22 ERA in 91.2 innings. He allowed 68 hits. He walked 34 and he struck out 136, which was a Dallas Baptist record. And it was the most in the Missouri Valley Conference by a wide margin last season. Mets picked him up with their third round pick. They signed him for slot value, which was $755,000. And he, threw a token amount of innings at the end of the season last year with the Mets. So what makes a guy with a 4.28 ERA and 111.1 innings with admitted solid peripherals, but what makes that guy worth a third-round pick and basically almost almost $1 million signing bonus? The stuff. And on the surface, his fastball seems kind of whatever. Sits in the low to mid-90s, 90 to 94, tops out like 95, 96. Not too exciting. But what is very exciting is what all these new advanced StatCast radar measurements that we're getting from minor league players and college players and everything, what's fun is what that tells us about his fastball. And his fastball averaged a little bit over 2,400 RPM last season, so that makes it above average in terms of that measurement. And, you know, he throws from a high three-quarters arm slot, but he really tucks his upper half down when he pushes off the mound. So even though his arm is high, his body is kind of low. So it's a weirdly low release point. And that high spin rate combined with where it's coming out of his hand, it gives his fastball that, you know, that mythical rising property that messes with hitters. So even though, you know, velocity-wise, it's kind of like, all right, whatever. The spin that it gets makes it, you know, above average.
This is basically and I'm not saying this dude's going to be Paul Sewald, but this is what made Paul Sewald so good for the Mariners last year. Like, for years, Paul Sewald's hanging out with the Mets with analytically impressive fastballs, but the Mets being a caveman in this regard are like, oh, you have a low arm slot. You got to throw down in the zone. Lo and behold, that doesn't actually work. It's better if you throw if you've got a low arm slot but can still throw a high spin fastball at the top of the zone. Like, that's what's most confusing to hitters just due to the angle of attack.
Yeah, his release point is kind of Sewaldian.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's a little – it's encouraging that the Mets grabbed this guy. I mean, hopefully they know what to do with the spin rate. They didn't just do the Sandy Alderson sort by spin rate instead of strikeout rate for the leaders now.
I like that taking a dude from Dallas Baptist has become a trend in the draft for the Mets.
Yeah.
Very, very good reputation for developing, I think particularly pitchers, but in its use of analytics, very good reputation for using analytics and to maximize performance. So,
they should give them a call for their bench coach opening.
Yeah, so they could turn the Mets down?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, his fastball isn't the only like analytically charged pitch. His slider, same thing.
Because that was the pitch when coming in, right? The slider? Yeah. Like, people were talking about that originally, and then the StatCast was like, oh, the fastball's good too.
Slider, you know, it's a low 80s pitch. It sits around 3,000 RPM, which is on the better side for sliders. And, you know, it's hard to kind of quantify that, though, because there's a lot of weirdness that goes on the sliders, because depending on, like, the grip and the spin axis and the efficiency and all that, you know, you can have an amazing slider that's crazy, like Chris Sale with the movement, and then you could have the same exact kind of thing, like DeGrom, or just has, like, a little bit of movement, but right at that really pivotal end moment. So,
right, is he throwing a gyro slider? Is he throwing a sweeping slider? Right,
exactly. But, you know, it's also another pitch that, you know, should be encouraging to see.
It gives him a nice base, because if you're a high spin fastball slider guy, you could just, if he doesn't work as like a starter, you could just put him in the pen.
And then he also has a legit curveball and a solid, you know, not half bad changeup.
That's nice. So,
yeah, he definitely, you know, he's able to command, he has all four pitches, he's able to command all four. He's got a durable frame, he's 6'2", 205 pounds. So, you know, it's just, it's a good package. And honestly, when I was making my list, I was like a little lukewarm about him, but in the last 5 minutes, I'm just kind of like hyping myself up a little bit.
No, yeah, I feel you. He's a riser. He could be a riser in the system type guy, because, again, the system's weak, like we've talked about a bunch, but also if all this stuff comes to fruition and he just dominates them, he could rise pretty quick here.
Yeah, I mean, he has some competition, but depending on how those other guys do, he could arguably be the best pitcher in the system next, you know, depending on Allen's how he does, obviously, and then how Ginn does, how Allen does, how Ziegler does, who we'll talk about in a little bit. But I mean, he is in the top percentile of Mets minor league pitchers here.
For sure. Which is simultaneously a good and bad thing.
Yeah, which is the thing. It's like, that's good, but also,
I kind of wish, like, we didn't immediately have a guy who's... How many innings did he pitch this year?
111?
I mean, that's not low, but it's also not, like, an incredible amount to be like, yeah, he might be the best pitcher in the system. Like, one of the best pitchers in the system.
91.2, excuse me.
Yeah, like, you know.
If I knew how to, you know, actually work the StatCast leaderboards, I could tell you where
I know
that pitch ranks in terms of, I don't want spin direction. I just want absolute spin. Why am I this incompetent at, you know?
It's not you. Don't worry. I know.
It's a weird website. Yeah, it's a weird one.
Like, they have active spin, which is an actually really interesting stat to look at, but where's just spin? Where is it?
All right,
I give up.
Where's
the
spin?
3,000 is high. Like, for instance, Max Scherzer is at 2,300. And spin isn't everything, of course. Like, Max Scherzer doesn't have a bad slider because his spin is only... Max Scherzer's slider is only 2,300 RPM. Trash.
Sucks. Trade.
Yeah, get rid of him. But, you know, 3,000, that's something to work with.
But 3,000 is, like, high. Like,
yes.
High.
Yes.
Like, that's, like, elite spin rate.
Well, hopefully the Mets know what to do with it. Him with it. All right, well, the next guy on our list is not as exciting analytically, statistically, any of that, but he got the job done last year, and number 15 is right-handed pitcher Adam Oller. And he went to Northwestern State University. He put up some good numbers over the 3 years that he pitched there. he threw 310.1 innings, and he had a cumulative 2.06 ERA for the Demons, allowed 248 hits, walked 75, and struck out 188. So not a lot of base runners. You know, defense helped the guys that did get on base to not score. Didn't walk too many guys, but really didn't strike too many guys out either. Pirates drafted him in the 20th round of the 2016 draft and gave him $70,000, and that's honestly a great gamble for a player with a solid track record like Aller. And at first, it looked like things were going to work out. In his first 2 years with the Pirates, he had a 3.50 ERA in the Appalachian League and New York Penn League, which is great results for a 20th round pick. But his 2018 season didn't go too well when he was in their low A and high A teams. And after a 6.29 ERA in 73 innings, the Pirates released him. And he gave baseball one last try. He played an indie ball in 2019, and he got noticed, and he got signed by the Giants after a couple starts, and he was solid with them. And then in the 2019 Rule 5 draft, the Mets took him in the minor league phase. And 1 year and one pandemic later, Aller was the Mets' 2021 minor league pitcher of the year. Between AA and AAA, he posted a 3.45 ERA in 120 innings. He allowed 93 hits, he walked 47, and he struck out 138. So Aller is a little bit like Josh Walker, who we talked about last week, except he's right-handed, obviously. But in terms of, you know, he's had success, but the stuff really isn't all that impressive. The fastball, again, sits low to mid-90s, about 92 to 95, tops out, you know, 96. He complements it with a full arsenal. He has a curveball, slider, changeup. None of them are really, you know, they're all like fringe to average pitches. But when you have that many things, when you have that many offerings, the whole package works. The Pirates wanted him to focus on his slider more than his curveball when they drafted him. And, you know, in college, his curveball was his go-to strikeout pitch. And things didn't really work out with him and the Pirates. And that kind of seems to be a theme with a lot of Pirate pitchers.
The Pirates had, like, some success in the early 2010s with a very specific plan. Mm-hmm. And then they thought, oh, well, we'll just do this for everyone. And it kind of fucked up all their pitchers.
Yeah.
Like, it worked for three guys and then fucked the rest of them up.
Pretty much. So, I mean, don't do what the Pirates do, basically.
Yeah, generally, like, I wonder how good you could make a team knowing nothing else except, the Pirates are doing X. What is the exact opposite of X? And I'm going to do that.
Well, I mean, you can't be really that much worse than the Pirates, so it's not going to be that much worse. But, you know, so Aller, you know, Aller's just basically kind of average all across the board. He's able to command everything. You know, he can locate to all four quadrants. But just the sum of him as a minor league player right now is greater than his individual parts. And I don't know if he has the individual parts to get major league batters out. But we'll see. And also a role change. You know, you throw a guy in a bullpen and say, just throw as hard as you can. And here's one good pitch that you do. Just throw this on pitch only. That always seems to help guys. So we'll see. We'll see. But, you know, it's a nice story.
And he was good this year. Like,
yeah.
Like, you can't deny the, like, I don't want to take away his on-the-field accomplishments because he was legitimately good.
He's the pitcher of the year.
And he deserved it.
Yeah.
Not that there's a lot.
Slider is legit good. Yeah. Like, I'd call it plus. At least. It's pretty good. Doesn't have, like, the high-end velo to be plus-plus or anything like that, but it's a good slider.
I wonder how he would fare against major league pitching, but we're going to see it this year, I'm sure, just by virtue of pitchers getting hurt, and that's just how life is.
Yeah, I mean, he is probably one or two in the depth chart once you get to, you know, having to call up guys in the minors.
Yeah. He's very much in the Tyler McGill role, how he was last year, where you're going to have to call him up and we'll see how he does. Like, I'm not saying he's going to be as effective as McGill was in the majors, but, like, because he was a surprise, but he's going to be that guy.
Like, so to be totally clear, the Mets should sign enough pitchers that either McGill or Peterson are starting in the rotation. So let's
Is that allowed? Is that allowed?
Is that allowed? I don't know.
Well, they're reviewing the CBA and they're going to write a totally no one for the Mets. So.
Only the Mets, not allowed to.
And they also held on to Trevor Williams, which is interesting. So, like, for once, they might have not shit starting pitching depth, but then you remember that DeGrom elbow, Carlos Carrasco, Taijuan Walker, Max Scherzer is approximately 60.
And he's the easily most durable one right now.
Yes.
Yep.
So there's some issues, health issues. Let's say they add one more guy, and then you have 6, 7, 8 is McGill, Peterson, Williams. If Adam Aller is your ninth starter, that's fine, I think.
Yeah, yeah, like, because, like, as much as we want, like, crazy depth, that's just not realistic, like, you, because you also have to, guys are not going to sign here. You're like, hey, no, actual major league pitcher, you want to be our seventh guy on the depth chart and start in Syracuse? They're going to tell you, go away. You know?
Oh, he might be 10th behind Yamamoto, actually, who I have not given up on.
So it's like, at some point, he's going to be high enough on the depth. He's one of the higher minor league guys who hasn't debuted yet. He might be one or two.
Yep.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, so coming up next on our list is number 14, and this gentleman is a outfielder, a center fielder, and he is Jake Mangum, a guy that we've spent lots of time talking about. Good things, you know, maybe some less flattering things here and there, I don't know, but we've talked about him a lot, so I'm not going to rehash everything. But quick recap, the Mets drafted him in 2018. He turned them down because he wanted to win a championship at Mississippi State University. And
Ron
he wanted
Howard voiceover. They did not win a championship.
Well, yes, they did not get that championship, but he also wanted to break Eddie Furness's SEC hit record. And he did do that. So, you know, 50% success rate. Is. But the Mets ended up drafting him a second time in 2019. He signed for basically pennies on the dollar because he was a senior signing. He signed for $20,000 and he became a Met. And while he didn't get that Mississippi State University ring, he did get that Cyclones ring. And honestly, I think that's a lot more, that's a lot better. It's a lot more important to me anyway. Probably not to him, but whatever. We ranked Mangum 24 in 2020. And then he fell off our list in 2021. Obviously, you know, there wasn't a season, but, you know, we heard some improvements from some guys and other guys, you know, fell because things that we heard. And when you're ranked 24, you're very tight. You're walking a tightrope anyway. But
and the ceiling was never really like
there
with him at that point.
So, you know, going from 24 to being off the list completely to 14 and now in 2022, it's kind of a not a big jump because, I mean, it's not like there's a lot of the system is very weak. So you can make this kind of jump and not really raise too many eyebrows. But, you know, it is kind of deserved in Mangum's case. In 84 games with Brooklyn and Binghamton, 90% of them with Binghamton, he hit .285, .337, .454. With 9 homers and 14 stolen bases. And here's the thing, though. He didn't just post a 117 WRC plus because he's an advanced 25-year-old guy beating up on, you know, players with less time and experience and everything than him. There were legit changes in his approach.
Yeah.
And they signal, you know, good things. Basically, with the Bulldogs and then with the Cyclones, he was kind of a slash hitter. He pulled the ball at a 30.8% rate. He went back up the middle at a 23.3% rate. And he went to the opposite field at a 45.9% rate. This past season, 2021, he basically reversed that. He pulled the ball at a 45.2% rate. He went back up the middle at a 22.6% rate. And he went to the opposite field at a 32.3% rate. And then by virtue of just pulling the ball more, he was hitting it harder and he was hitting it in the air more. So that resulted in a spike in his ISO. In 2019, he had a 23.3% line drive rate, a 52.7% ground ball rate, and a 24% fly ball rate. And that resulted in a 0.49 ISO. Now this past season, he had a 16.9% line drive rate. So that's basically, you know, a little lower, but more or less the same. He had a 48.8% ground ball rate. So it's a little lower, but it's more in line like the year prior. And a 34.3% fly ball rate. So that's about 10% higher. And that resulted in his ISO going from 049 to 165. So in short, he started pulling the ball more. It resulted in more power, fewer weak outs. Combine that with his already average to above average hit tool, you know, ability to make contact, his above average to plus center field defense. You got something, I'm not going to say special, given everything else, you know, his age and experience and blah, blah, blah. But it's playable. It's, you know, that's workable on a major league roster.
We should also, I mean, we should point out two things. One, on the positive side, the jump to double A is kind of cliche as the hardest jump in the ladder, aside from going to the majors. So it's good that he did well there. On the other hand, the quality of double A and triple A this past year was bad, as we've mentioned before. So there's definitely some noise in here. But all the things that Steve pointed out are exactly the kind of changes you'd want to see him make. The defense is still there. Like if he can scrape a 80 WRC plus in the big leagues and be a useful runner and play defense, that's not a starter, but it's a viable bench outfielder.
When you don't have to sign Kevin Pillar because you could promote him from AAA.
Exactly.
Like, you know, that's what good teams do. And if the Mets made the changes possible where they don't have to, in a year or two, they don't have to worry about their fourth or fifth outfielder because it's him, and they could spend their offseason signing other people. Not that, like, that's a huge brain power thing. It's just time, and it's just when you can handle it in-house, you should. And it's nice if that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
It'll just make things easier for them.
What should they sign Kevin Pillar for?
That contract was weird. It was like he had an opt-out that he used. But it was like a few million, maybe one or two or something. And
here we go. 2.9 million.
It was a little higher.
That was his option.
Yeah, basically there was some weird option structure in order to reduce the luxury tax.
Yeah, they did it with Walker too and someone else, I can't remember.
Basically he got like 5 million. Why the hell he opted out of that, I do not understand.
I mean, thank God, but sorry, Kevin Pillar, if you're listening, but
I don't think you need to worry about that. Although we do have more listeners than I realize, so thank you out there, listeners.
Hmm. Someone wanted to watch our sitcom.
Yes, exactly.
Honestly, I would want to watch our sitcom too, so I feel you, buddy.
It can guest star Kevin Pillar if that makes his feelings better.
But yeah, like, honestly, this year was the time I was like, oh, I could see him being like a fourth or fifth outfielder, like an Albert Almora type. And he was a usable piece for those Cubs teams when they were good, you know?
Yeah.
Like, of course, he fell off a cliff pretty quick, but also, like, plus if the Mets get those few years out of him.
He could steal bases. It's nice to see guys that can steal bases.
Come up and, like, if he comes up in September and all he does is pinch run and move Brandon Nimmo to a corner or whatever they're doing and in defense at that time, then, like, you know, like, do that. Maybe he gets one or two at bats and a blowout. If they're good, and they've already clinched or whatever, you could start him a game or two and give him a bone. But, like, those guys are useful too. Like, Terrence Gore has been a useful player on many a team, and he cannot hit a baseball, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying he's that, but, like, you could use players who are specialized in certain things and can't hit, like, if you're smart. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the Mets could start doing that.
Well, the Mets tried that with Billy Hamilton. That didn't work because Mets.
I mean, it was too early in the season for that, you know? Like, the Mets had Eric Young Jr. in 2015.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Eric.
I loved Eric Young Jr. I didn't like the fact that they traded Colin McHugh for him, but I loved Eric Young Jr.
Piscataway, New Jersey native.
That one looks real bad now.
That trade was idiotic at the time, man.
It looks worse now, though. I didn't think McHugh was ever going to be this good. Sorry, Colin McHugh, if you're listening. I thought he was going to be, like, solid, but he's actually really good now. The Mets should probably sign him. Good.
Mm-hmm. I was pretty confident Mangum will play in the big league someday. I'm now, like, positive.
Oh, I'm, like, almost 100%. Like, I'd bet on it.
Would you take over or under 5 major league hits?
Over.
Over.
Okay.
Honestly, they should hire him as, like, the bench coach. I think he can do that right now.
He gives me huge vibes of being a coach. He retires at, like, 32, and
he might be too pro player to ever get hired as a coach, as in, like, too, like, in terms of union stuff, too outspoken about that. Or he's going to be like, don't support players getting paid.
He does seem to be that, like, I do like that stuff from him. That even coming out of college, he was like, this sucks. Why do
dude just, like, fucking blowtorch the NCAA on his way out the door. It was great.
Yeah, it was awesome. I was like, oh, hell yeah, I hope you turn into Barry Bonds.
Unlikely, but sure, sure.
He's the leader of men, that Jake Mangum.
He basically increased his ISO by, like, 300%, so keep the trend going.
Exactly.
Wait, what's his current ISO? What was his current ISO after a 300% increase?
I don't know if that was right, but it's currently 165.
Okay, so he could increase it by another 200% and he's still being a little lower than Bonds.
It's okay though, because it's a progression. It's like
exponential growth.
Yes, exactly.
So in 2 years he's gonna be ISOing 1200.
Yep.
If these trends continue.
All right, so number 13 on the list now is another guy who's pretty close to cracking a major league roster, and that is right-handed pitcher Eric Orsi. And anytime you talk about Orsi, obviously you need to talk about the crazy journey that he had getting to where he is now. After graduating high school in 2015, he went to Northwest Florida State College. It was a community college in Niceville, Florida, which is pretty nice. And then after his 2 seasons there, he transferred to the University of New Orleans in 2018. And instead of that being, you know, that should have been a happy year. Like, hey, you transferred to a legit NCAA baseball program. You're going to be pitching. Your baseball future is very bright. Hooray. Instead of that, he got news that he had testicular cancer. He had the surgery to remove that. And the surgery was successful, but he had to get rushed back to the hospital not too long after because fluid was building up in his lungs. So while that was being fixed, doctors also discovered that he had melanoma. So
I don't think I knew that part.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the other part. I don't think I knew the second part there.
Yeah. So 2 cancers, 3 procedures later, he missed the entire 2019 season. Then, obviously, he missed 2020 because of COVID and everything. So Mets drafted him in 2020 with their 5th round pick. They were kind of making a gamble.
If you don't remember, that's the last round pick.
That was the last round pick that year. And ironically, Orsi is the only one that's left now because he traded.
Also, even at the time, I was like, he might be the best one outside of like the early stuff. So
they traded PCA to Chicago. They traded Isaiah Green to Cleveland. They traded Matthew Dyer to Tampa. And Anthony
Dyer always sucked.
Was Dyer released. Sucked. Yeah.
Anthony Walters was even worse than Dyer.
He was, he was quite bad. At the time, it was
Orsi was clearly the third best guy they drafted, even with all the missed time. Even at the time.
So this past season, he pitched at 3 levels, Brooklyn, Binghamton, and Syracuse, and he was pretty solid. He had a cumulative 3.08 ERA in 49.2 innings over 34 appearances. He allowed 38 hits. He walked 14 and he struck out 67. His fastball sits in the low to mid-90s. It has a lot of sink. And then he complements the fastball with a splitter and a slider and the occasional cutter, though that occasional cutter might just kind of be like a slider that
doesn't slide.
Yeah, it didn't really slide exactly. His slider is kind of fringe average to average, but the splitter is an above average to possibly even plus pitch. Since the mid-80s, it has 12 to 1300 RPM, which is a little below average for MLB splitter. But that makes it better than average because, you know, like it's inverted. Like you want a splitter to have fewer RPMs.
There's some interesting research about this in regards to Ian Anderson, who has an insanely low spin rate on everything. So it's not necessarily that being high is good across the board. It's just be
an outlier.
Right. Yes.
You want to be above average for whatever it is.
Right. You want to be far from the mean because essentially pitching is a game of – That's or hitting, we should say, deception. Is a game of recognition, right? That's pitching really is a game of deception, right? So if you're throwing, if hitters are all used to seeing generally the same shit and your shit looks the same but is slightly different, whoop, I missed that pitch by 2 inches.
Yep, and with the splitter, you know, it's important that it doesn't have that backspin that keeps it aloft for...
Yeah, because that'll
time, because you want it to, you know, dart down.
That just gets crushed.
Yeah,
that gets put into the home run apple if it doesn't. Yeah. If it has too much.
I also love splitters. I know I've talked about my love for changeups, just aesthetic, not changeups, curveballs aesthetically, but splitters are right behind there. I wish more American pitchers threw splitters. I love that all the Japanese imports throw splitters.
Good splitter, man.
Ooh. Oh, it's disgusting.
Yeah, it's just great how it just, like, dies on its way to the plate.
Orzy being, like, a sinkerball splitter reliever is, like, it's so aesthetically pleasing. Like, it's going to piss so many people off when he gets, like, three crappy ground ball outs, mm-hmm. like, to Francisco Lindor, you know? Like they just ground the ball three times to Lindor, who makes three nice plays, and then we get out of the inning, and everyone's like, man, why did I get out three times to this guy, you know?
Like, I think this also fits into that deception idea, right? Like, yeah. We've talked a little bit about the Rays building the bullpen clock with all the different arm angles, right? You want relievers with different looks. So if you can go, here's my generic middle reliever dude with 95 and a slider, and here's my next guy who's 95 with a splitter. It's not the same thing. Good luck.
Also, like, could you imagine facing DeGrom or Scherzer all game with all their overpowering crazy stuff, and then you face a 92-mile-per-hour sinker and a splitter? I'd be like, what the hell is happening? Can I go? Like, and Trevor May has talked about following DeGrom on, like, podcasts and stuff and how difficult it is because your stuff is so average compared to his. But, like, this is so different compared to his. I wonder if it would be, like, actually harder, you know? Because it's just not even in the same realm of baseball when you're throwing – slower splitters and sinker balls and shit, you know?
Well, that's why that sidearm dude, no, that submarine dude, I forget his name, that's why he's, like, so crazy good.
Which one?
Taylor Rogers?
Yeah.
Oh, Trevor's the one who, splitter? Like, throws the slider that actually rises?
Yeah, he's crazy. Like, I don't know how anyone hits him. Like,
well, the answer is no one did.
I know, yeah, but... because that's nuts, that stuff.
Imagine facing DeGrom and Scherzer and then facing him. It's just give up.
I'm going to go home and cry.
Yeah, good night. But yeah, he's a very aesthetically pleasing pitcher for me too, Lucas. Like that stuff, I like that stuff.
All right, so next on our list now is number 12, and that is right-handed pitcher and Canadian individual. Calvin Ziegler.
Canadian individual. Now, Steve, tell us, is that a plus or a minus that you're bringing?
I mean, I guess it depends on what we're judging here.
I'm not your buddy, guy.
That's what I thought of, too.
Yep. He is from Ontario. He was being seen and being scouted by, you know, he was making for a name for himself. But then he was forced to basically relocate to Central Florida because of COVID last season. And, you know, the borders between the U.S. and Canada closed for a time. So that would have basically doomed his baseball prospects if he stays.
I do want to say, that it's pretty funny that Canada was like, no, we can't have any baseball. And Florida was like, yes, we will get your import and play baseball during a pandemic. That's just all you need to know about the differences between how Florida handled everything and how honestly, Canada.
I got to go with Florida in this case. I want baseball. But he moved to Florida and he transferred to the TNXL Academy in some place in Florida that I can't pronounce. Okoge?
Sure.
O-C-O-E-E. Okoge sounds nice. And that's where he finished the 2021 season last year. And with their second round pick, the Mets selected Ziegler, the 46th player selected overall. And they signed him for, whoops. Well, that's embarrassing. I just clicked on my computer screen and everything just disappeared. Here it goes.
They signed him. We need technical glitch intermission here.
He signed for $910,000, which is basically $700,000 below MLB assigned slot value because, you know, Mets were pulling off their money and saving it for some player that didn't really work out. But anyway, Ziegler, he throws from a high three-quarters arm slot, a little bit of crossfire. Fastball sits low to mid-90s this past spring. Occasionally, it touched as high as 97, which is an improvement from, like, his junior year of high school. He credits the coaches at TXNL. He basically helped him, you know, make his mechanics more efficient. And, you know, he's very much, you know, what's the word that we use a lot?
Just, there are a lot of those, Steve.
Like right-handed pitcher starter kit, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the fastball, he's got a solid slider, he's working on the change, all that, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, he's good fastball, good frame, nothing but up from here, hopefully.
Can we trade him for another top 15-ish player in baseball like we did with Josh Wolf? Is that an option?
It would be nice.
I like his chances to be a starter a little more than Wolf because I just think Wolf is his delivery is too, like, weird
whippy
to be a starter. Yeah, like, I don't know. I just don't see that lasting a full game and being him being able to keep that up. But also, like, people say that about Chris Sale. But also, Chris Sale is an outlier. Like, if you give that to most people, they're not going to start. Yeah. So, like, I like his chances to be an actual starter better than Wolf. But also, if someone comes call, if the Guardians are like, hey, Jose Ramirez is on the block, then I'd be like, yeah, sure, you can have you. We could do the same trade again.
Let's do this again.
Like, we could just run that back real quick with Mauricio and Ziegler. I'm fine with that.
I mean, I've made my opinions about Jose Ramirez being the better player of the two known repeatedly, so yeah. I will personally drive all of these prospects across country in order to get Jose Ramirez on the Mets.
Ramirez is really underrated.
Ramirez is like a top five player who plays the game and also looks like Juan Uribe. So imagine Juan Uribe except Hall of Fame track.
Yeah, Ramirez is really good, and he just kind of gets lost in the sauce over there. Even when they were good, he wasn't, like, crazily talked about amongst, like, casual fans, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Ziegler's fine. I don't really care. He would have been more. I'd be more interested in talking about him, weirdly, if the Mets had actually pulled off the whole rocker thing, because then it would have been like, yeah, this guy's interesting, and they saved money, and now it's they saved money for
no one. Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Exactly. That's the biggest problem here. It's hard to look at, you know, it's not anything Ziegler did, obviously, but it's just hard to look at him and be like, oh man, like we could have had somebody better if they would have known ahead of time that they were not interested in Rocker, which for whatever reason they didn't know ahead of time. I don't know. I'm still angry about that whole thing.
I'll never not be angry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even if they end up like being good and the Rocker stuff was, they were right about Rocker, I guess, because that's in the realm of possibility. Like, why didn't you just sign a, like, draft some dude in the 20th round to give the money to. Like, that's where I'm annoyed about it. Like, mm-hmm. not so much at this point, at these parts, because they did the right things after a rocker until the last pick, when they just kind of kept not drafting the backup. Because they even drafted a backup with Allen. Mm-hmm. Like, I forgot his name now. He went to Florida.
Florida, yep.
Hunter Barco.
Yes. Yeah. And, like, if Allen told him to go piss off, then they just signed Barco and that's it, you know? And we don't really care about that. But the Mets, they didn't do that again. Like, they didn't do that this time, and they paid for it.
Mets.
Because even if they did sign the 20th round guy, we'd be like, okay, well, the Rocker thing didn't work out. They still got the high-end prospect, and Siegler's interesting because they could afford it.
Mm-hmm. But no. But no use crying over spilled milk, I guess.
Yeah, I still want to see what Ziegler does, because he is interesting. Like, he is a legitimate prospect that people were like, oh, that's a good pick. Even.
Yeah, it wasn't. He was selected 46 overall. It's not like he was expected to go 460th overall, you know, like he was solid. He was a guy that would have been selected by some team in, you know, the top 100.
Yeah.
All right. So next up now, number 11 is a catcher, Hayden Senger.
Oh, we've reached. I didn't realize we were going to get to this fight today.
Yep. Well, is it a fight? I don't know if it's a fight, but
I think it's going to be a fight, Steve.
He was drafted in 2018. The Mets used their 24th round selection to pick him. He signed for $125,000, which is the highest allowable sum that a post-10th round draftee can get without the bonus being counted against the team's draft pool. They sent him to excuse me, Kingsport and Brooklyn that year. Then in 2019, he was promoted to the Cola Flies, who I miss, and he spent.
RIP.
Well, they're still alive.
RIP for us.
Yes. Yeah. He spent the entire 2019 season with them. He hit 230, 324, 345 in 90 games. He hit four homers. He had 25 walks and 64 strikeouts. He would have likely gone to St. Lucie in 2020, but COVID prompted Major League Baseball to cancel the season. So when the season resumed in 2021, he went to Brooklyn Cyclones instead, because they were now the Mets High affiliate. And he spent basically a month there. He went 13 for 43 in 11 games. He had 8 extra base hits, which is pretty good. And then he was promoted to Binghamton for the remainder of the season. And 50 games at the Rumble Ponies, he hit 254, 337, 387. With 3 homers and a 16-62 walk to strikeout ratio. So with Senger, he flashes about average raw power in batting practice, but that really hasn't translated into too many game situations because his hit tool is just lagging behind there. When he is able to, you know, put bat on ball, you know, he sprays the ball around, he has the occasional pop, but, you know, he just really needs to stay balanced and just kind of get everything in sync at the plate. But while that's still developing behind the plate, it's a different story. He is a very good catcher, an average to above average, at least, defensive catcher. He's quick to pop up. He transfers the ball very nicely. He has an average to above average arm, but he gets his runners. He threw out 18 of 38 last year, and he has a 35% Coors ceiling rate for his career. He blocks the ball well. He receives it well. He frames it well. You know, he's just everything that everything that goes on behind the plate, he does at least well. And of the aspects, he does better than well. So it's good to see. You like to see it. It's what you want out of a catcher. Now, what are we about to fight about here?
Steve, you were extremely resistant, and I really should let Thomas and or Ken go off about this more, to our arguments about protecting Senger and Rule 5 and such things.
It's just, he's a top 10 prospect, or top 11 for us, but I think I had him in the top 10. How do you not protect a top 10 prospect in your system? Like, mm-hmm. like no matter who it is, even if you don't really like the player, like, it's just they are one of the top 10 prospects in the system, no matter how bad the system is. So those are the guys you should be auto-protecting for me. Like, that's just how I view it. Like, unless you're trading them, which is a different story because you're getting something for it. But to me, Senger is like a legit backup catcher option. Like, he's never going to – I don't think he's ever going to hit enough to be a starter. Like, I'm not saying, like, he's some future superstar. But if you don't have to pay a backup catcher to be, like, an okay hitter and a good defender and you could just Tomas Nito it because Nito's a fine backup catcher, like, if you could just – when Nito gets too expensive or whatever and he walks, then you just promote Senger and here you go. Like, you just kind of seamlessly replace that. That's good because, mm-hmm. like, he could actually catch. Like, I really think he could catch. The hitting is, like, up and down, of course, but.
I mean, I'm not going to argue against that. I just think that he is not that great, so the fact that they didn't protect him, it's not the end of the world. That's all.
No, it's more, like, process over, like, yeah. the actual thing of, like, who the player is.
Yeah.
It's, like, and you don't have – the system's so bad, how could you just let a top 10 prospect or top 11 – because I keep saying top 10 because he's in mine. But a top 11 prospect just, like, get taken away from you for free, you know, if it comes down to that. Because especially, I could see a team just trying
especially
it.
Especially when have the Patrick Mazekas of the world on their 40-man roster.
He's the third best catcher in the system, easily, like, right now. Like, I'm not – of course, Alvarez is not, like – that's a different story because he's, like, 19. But I'm talking about for – in the upper minors, like, he should be third on the depth chart. And he's not even protected in the Rule 5. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. When Patrick Mazeika can't even catch. Like, he's not a good catcher.
No, he spends more time in first base.
He also can't hit.
Yeah. So it's just, like, I want to know what my, like, what they see in him. I know he's, like, a smart dude and, like, he's a good bench guy. Like, McNeil really likes to talk to him about hitting and stuff. And he has big coach vibes. But
yeah,
also,
he's going
to
be very good.
He's the 2030 Binghamton Rumble Ponies manager.
Yeah, but you could also DFA that because no one's claiming him on waivers. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean,
and if they do,
head start on coaching.
you don't want to DFA him because then the relationship will be strained, and you don't want a strained relationship when you're trying to hire your 2030.
Could you imagine if that's what it actually is? They're just going to hire him as the bench coach, and they're going to be like, "Well, that's how you open up the spot on the 40."
That would be unique.
Here's the thing with Senger as well, and. Thomas, point A, Tomas Nito is now arguably the best framing catcher in baseball.
Yeah, he's a very,
if not,
very good catcher.
At worst, he's top three. Senger is only slightly worse in terms of minor league catching framing numbers. And yes, those are much noisier than major league numbers, et cetera, but it also was backed up by the scouting report that this guy is a high-end receiver. And until we know that the automated strike zone is coming, and what we can see, it's certainly not imminent, right? 5 years, 10 years, maybe, but it's not going to happen tomorrow.
It doesn't sound like this. It's in the next, like, from what we've heard. Like, it's not going to come up now.
Senger, even if he doesn't hit well, could be an above-average value catcher based purely on the defense. Like, it... Not protecting him is maddening to me, and not even that, but I don't understand why we'd rank him below a lot of these other names, right? Where it's, for instance, I know on this list he's above Ziegler. I don't know why he'd ever be ranked below him or ranked below Cenk Mangum or even ranked below someone like Jalen Palmer. Just because having even a viable catcher of any quality is so hard given the landscape of the position. So I don't know. I quite like Senger. I'm also the kind of person who wants Tomas Nito to be the starting catcher because I think catcher defense is just the most important thing. But
just want to see the world burn.
Look, I'll take him hitting 230 or whatever.
I mean, McCann also hits 230.
Exactly. Like, if he's the best framing catcher in baseball, like I'll live with that. So, I don't know. I quite like Senger. I think the Mets. The other thing is that it's easy to hide a backup catcher, right? Like there are certain parts of your roster it's easier to sneak a guy in for Rule 5. Like, you can get away with your fifth catch, your second catcher, particularly with the 26-man roster, not being good.
I mean, no one's backup catcher could hit. Otherwise,
exactly.
They start.
Right. Like, right. Like, this is – it's one thing if you have, like, an outfielder or corner infielder who, whatever, can't hit yet but might in the future. That's a lot harder to hide for a whole season. It's a lot easier to hide a catcher. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I hope he doesn't get picked, because then we're looking at Patrick Mazeika starting catcher again like we were down the stretch last year.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to worry. There are better catchers available, so –
Are there?
Pretty sure.
Free agent list, MLB 21.
No. In the Rule 5 draft, I mean.
I don't even know about that one. We'll see.
He's up there. He's up there for catchers. Because the rest of them are probably young. Like,
there's one. Yeah. The one better one might be Blake Hunt on the Rays. But other than that, yeah.
What's his name?
Blake Hunt.
Okay.
Right. But, like, I don't know. It was just bad process for me.
Yeah,
the result might be fine, and we might just
see it. I'm not going to – it is bad process. I mean, he's a guy that has more skill than guys that are already on the roster, so why would you do that?
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, I don't think we have anything to worry. And if he does get selected, I will eat my hat. I'll eat my pizza rat hat.
Because
pizza rats. All right, and now the last guy that we are going to discuss this week. We've finally cracked our top 10 list, and our top 10 ranked prospect for 2022 is infielder/outfielder Jalen Palmer. And Palmer is a Canarsie native, so he gets bonus points there. And he went to high school in Flushing, so he gets more bonus points there. And, you know, he's also a pretty solid prospect. The Mets drafted him with their 22nd round pick in 2018, and they gave him $200,000. So some of that went towards the bonus pool they had. And they sent him to the GCL Mets the remainder of that season, and he hit pretty well. Then he was promoted to Kingsport last season. I don't know. Does that technically count? At this point, 2021 is last season. They sent him to Kingsport in 2019, and he was one of the younger players there, and he was also one of the better players there. So it was kind of exciting. And then after missing 2020 because of COVID, he returned to the field in 2021. They sent him to St. Lucie. And in 66 games, the 20-year-old Palmer, he hit .276, .378. .386 with two homers, 23 stolen bases in 28 attempts, and a 39-81 walk to strike out ratio. And then in August, he was promoted to Brooklyn Cyclones, his hometown team, and he spent the rest of the season there. And in 39 games, he hit .189, .314, .336 with four homers, seven stolen bases in eight attempts, and 25 walks to 65 strikeouts. So all in all, at both stops, he hit .244, .354, .368 with six homers, 30 stolen bases in 36 attempts, and 64 walks to 146 strikeouts. So the strikeouts are obviously problematic, not good. He has a kind of long swing with some natural uppercut, so that, you know, is going to make you susceptible to strikeouts to begin with. But he lunges a lot. You know, he finds himself in front of the ball a lot. So that doesn't help. So key to his continued development is going to be just recognizing pitches. But, you know, he is 20 years old, and he did miss a year of baseball. So, you know, this is not like pitch recognition needs to improve. It's not like this is an unheard of problem for him.
No, yeah.
You know? You know, a lot, it's been the dooms of a lot of guys, but a lot of guys have also actually improved to the point that they become viable players. So there's time. We'll see. He does have power, though, in at least in batting practice right now anyway. Average to above average. What did he average? With St. Lucie, where we had the StatCast data, he averaged 91.4 miles per hour exit velocity, and he maxed out at 109.8. So those are good numbers. His launch angle, though, is not particularly good in St. Lucie anyway. He had an 8.9 degree launch angle, which is fairly low. So increasing that a little bit would certainly help to help some of the balls clear the wall. Stuff that he does hit on the ground, though, he does have a chance because he is very speedy. He's an average to an above average runner. He stole 23 bases last year, which was seventh in low A Southeast. So that's good. He has good instincts. He's a good base runner, you know, all those kinds of things. And defensively, he's interesting. He was drafted as a shortstop. They started to transition him to third base in 2019 to spell, you know, and then they started him transitioning into the outfield this past season. So, you know, a lot of possibilities depending on, you know, where he's looks best at. But in the outfield where he's playing right now, he has the ability to play center. You know, he's very athletic. He's very speedy, so he has range. And obviously, you know, the more reps that he gets out there, he'll see the ball off the bat better. He'll take better routes.
I've seen him play the outfield. He looks pretty natural. Like,
yeah.
He didn't look uncomfortable.
No.
Which is always, like, that's like an eye test thing, but also it's nice to see. Like, I'd rather, like, you could kind of tell dudes who don't really like being out there or don't look great at it, you know?
They
like,
have that frozen deer look when you hear the crack of the bat.
Yeah, and they're kind of like hesitant. He was not like that at all. He was just making the plays. And they were routine. He didn't make any crazy plays or anything, but it was everything was hit to him, and like he had to move around a bit, and he just made everything look. If you didn't tell me he was an outfielder, like if he was an infielder before, I would have thought he just played the outfield.
There's nowhere near a comparison, but he kind of has like that Beltran kind of thing. Like when he makes plays, he just makes the play. Like he doesn't.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know, like it's very natural.
He takes five strides between first and second base, basically. And it's like you watch him. If you just like if your camera's zoomed in on him running, you're like, man, this dude's moving slow. And then if you zoom out to have landmarks, you're like, oh no, this dude's flying.
Yeah. He's very easy athletic. Like he doesn't look like he's like exerting himself, but you could tell that he's fast, and you could tell that he can move.
Yep,
I'm worried.
I'm worried about the strikeouts.
The strikeouts are worrying.
I think the swing just needs. I'm afraid the swing needs to be totally nuked and rebuilt because it's. I don't think it looks natural. He doesn't look comfortable. It almost looks like he's trying to shorten up and failing to do so. Look. This is extremely my shit. This guy, but. The swing is bad enough that I'm quite concerned.
I don't disagree.
Very strong Sherwin Newton vibes.
Yeah, I could see that. Not in a good way either. Like in a, well, there's no good way about it, but you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I like him though.
We've talked about this a little bit in the past, how the Mets don't have a great track record of developing their hitters outside of Pete Alonso. And it feels like Palmer might be the latest victim of that, where they drafted it. That might not be fair to the Mets, right? Like it's not like doing this is easy, but it certainly feels like they haven't helped him a whole lot, which fits a pattern with the organization of just not really helping their hitters develop in any real way. Again, excluding Pete Alonso.
Yeah, because they totally fixed that shit.
right. Let's give them credit where it's due. They like took Pete Alonso's Garbo metal bat swing and turned it into something great. For basically everyone else they've tried to fix, it's not worked at all. Yeah. So,
see, I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know if it's going to work in Palmer's favor or not, but I feel like since there are so many issues in terms of the swing is, you know, it's problematic. The pitch recognition is problematic. The fact that, you know, he is on the young side to begin with, and he is a cold-weather baseball player, so he's facing guys that, you know, have a shit ton more experience than he ever did.
That's a good
I don't
one.
Know if all of that stuff is good or, you know, in the sense of, okay, he is doing what he's doing right now with all those quote-unquote handicaps right now, and, you know, like we should expect, okay, more experience, he will become better, or on the flip side, it's just all this stuff working against him, and it's just going to sink him, you know? So, I don't know.
He's also only 20. Like,
yeah. Like, I tend to be optimistic, though, because I like Palmer a lot, and again, he's from Brooklyn and Cyclones, and, you know, we love it.
Oh, yeah, I know that, like, I don't want to say the fan side, but I guess it is the fan side. Like, there's prospects that, I don't know, at least for me, I root for. Like, I root for all of them, but they're specific, like, my guys type thing, and he's one of them. Like, he was pretty immediately. And it would be really, like, cool if he figures it out, and I hope he does. But also, like Lucas said, there's reasons to be worried. Mm-hmm. It's a few years of the same type of thing, and it's like, well, I hope that he could actually figure it out. And hopefully we get new player development stuff, because there's been a lot of turnover in his Mets career, too, like new ownership and everything else. Like, it's not like it's been pretty smooth sailing either, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right, so those are prospects for this week. And we'll leave things off now with the Will Pondery of the week. And the Will Pondery of the week goes to Dan Shaughnessy. And we know he's a clown, but his Hall of Fame ballot for this year, it came out, and it basically confirms that he hasn't changed his ways and that he's still a clown. Because for the second year in a row now, he voted for just one guy, Jeff Kent. What? First of all, I don't know what goes through your head to say, I'm going to vote for just one guy. Whatever. You want to make a statement. Okay, cool. You're real edgy. Of all of the guys, though, Jeff Kent?
I was the only one who even initially said Hall of Fame for him when we did our ballot, right?
Pretty sure.
Ken, did you say yes for Kent?
No.
No?
I could see it because he's one of the better hitting second basemen. I think I said no.
I think I said yes initially, and you guys convinced me no. And this clown, Jeff Kent.
Like, of all the people you could vote for, though, Jeff Kent. Like,
It is actually a little... I don't know. I don't want to like inflate the importance of the Hall of Fame or the writers or even baseball in general, right? Like, I don't want to do that too much. But voting for this is a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maintaining the game's history is a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're this fucking incompetent repeatedly, why are you allowed to hold on to that privilege?
What was his reason?
He doesn't give one.
He didn't give one?
Yeah, he hasn't.
Because I want to know how the Boston Globe guy doesn't vote for Big Poppy. Like, you know, like, I'm thinking that's him, right? Yeah, right? Like, what in the world? Like, if anyone should be doing the ignore Big Poppy steroids thing, it's the guy who has spent his entire life working in Boston and knows what he did for that city and how important he was for the Red Sox and how he basically, like, is Mr. Red Sox for the... Sorry, Dustin Pedroia, but, like, when I think of the Red Sox, I think of Big Poppy. You know what I mean?
It's not even fucking consistent, though, because there are other non-steroid dudes who should be in the Hall of Fame from this list. Yeah. Like, look, if you're I'm not going to vote for Poppy and Clemens and Bonds because steroids. All right.
Trevor Hoffman. He's a nice, wholesome guy. Whatever.
Jeff Kent's not a nice, wholesome guy.
No, exactly. He's an asshole. That's famously an asshole.
His case is kind of borderline. He was a noted dick, and I don't know. It just doesn't make sense.
I always thought he did steroids, too. Like, I don't know why I thought that. Like, I guess he never got popped for it, otherwise he would have gotten voted for it. But he just looks like someone who did steroids. Like, he gives that vibe to me, Jeff Kent.
Yeah,
well, like, I always attributed them to him. I don't know. It's just, you should lose your vote if you do that, if you pull that shit. Like, I don't want to say you have to vote for 10 people or whatever it is, because then, like, maybe some years there isn't a deserving 10, but almost every year you could find 10. Mm-hmm. And you could find 10 that you don't really have to think too hard about, even if you do want to do character clause stuff, which I'm all for. And if you really do care about the steroids in that regard, then I think steroids were the name of the game too much at that point, where you kind of have to let them in to tell people how baseball was at the time. But that's my opinion, but also, obviously, that's not everyone's. But, like, I don't know. If you're voting for just Jeff Kent, dude, just,
like, come on.
Come on, man. Like, just vote for other people. Like, keep someone on the ballot, you know? Like, like, if you want to make a statement like that, keep some dude on the ballot who might not make it, or vote for someone who you think deserves it, who doesn't get talked about enough, you know? Like, I'd rather people do that with their ballot than do that or send it in empty or whatever the hell people do. Like,
yeah, that's another stupid thing.
And then just not say anything about it. Like, oh, yeah, I voted for Jeff Kent. Why? Huh? Is my
pretty much that's
it's my right to do that. Well, it is, but also it's my right to be like, this is dumb, you know? I don't know.
Well, that's why he's the Wilpon of the week.
But he's always like that, so.
Yeah. It's just the perfect, like, arrogance that's so Wilpon-y, and I know better than everyone else, when in fact you're just a fucking moron.
Yeah.
Yep. That encapsulates it perfectly. All right, well, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you could send us an email at our email address, from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You could follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at Luke, excuse me. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at KenLavin91. And Thomas is at SaidMetSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast or get a podcast from, rate and review it. And of course, thank you for listening, and we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets.
Love the Mets.